Hey everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? This time, let's talk about mechanical keyboards. So I've got a new mechanical keyboard on order. It's the first one that I've bought in actually quite a while. My existing one, which I use at my day job, is probably 5 or 6 years old. And while I really like it, my coworkers, I suspect, don't because it's kind of noisy. So I placed an order for a new one and I got to thinking, you know, there's such variety in these kinds of keyboards now, it might be worth just picking it up as a podcast topic. So I'm hoping to maybe kind of give you a decent little overview on what mechanical keyboards are all about in case you aren't familiar with them, and then why you'd even really want to consider one. In order to understand mechanical keyboards, we need to talk about a more common type of keyboard today, and they're generally referred to as membrane keyboards. They're going to be very inexpensively manufactured, even though they may not cost, you know, a cheap amount. There are mechanical keyboards that are inexpensive, and likewise, there are membrane keyboards that are a bit overpriced, in my opinion. But what a membrane keyboard is, basically, it's all plastic. In simple terms, it's where you have a plastic film sheet inside the keyboard that's got half contacts for each of the keys printed on it. Over the top of that is a silicone membrane that covers that entire sheet usually, and in it are these molded in little dimples that stick up right in the center of where every key normally is. Inside the center of each one of those dimples facing down is a little conductive pad. If you're familiar with taking apart handheld consoles or game controllers, you're probably going to recognize what those pads are like. They're those little black pads, and they're what activate the buttons. It's the exact same concept with membrane keyboards. So the idea is your plastic keycaps sit on top of that silicone membrane, and every time you press down on one of the keys, it causes that dome to flex and press down on the plastic sheet, forming a contact between the two halves of the circuit and registering a key press. And this is all fine and good, and the keyboards can be inexpensively purchased. I mean, like I said, some membrane keyboards are fairly expensive because they've got added-on features like Bluetooth or whatever. But in general, membrane keyboards are kind of your run-of-the-mill keyboard. It's going to come packed into the box when you buy a new computer. If you work on a keyboard at work, or you've got a computer lab at school or whatever, that's predominantly the kind of keyboard that you're going to find. Just because they're inexpensive and they're fairly reliable and they just work for most people. The problem with membrane keyboards, or at least the major problem with membrane keyboards that some people have, is that they are not satisfying to type on at all. They feel really mushy and you get very little feedback. Sometimes there's very little key travel. Sometimes there's no noise. You know, some of these things people like. Some people prefer that their keyboard is silent because it doesn't piss off the people in the cubicles next to them. And some people just couldn't care less as to what the keyboard feels like because, you know, maybe they don't spend all that much time on it. But other people can spend a lot of time on a keyboard, and the way the keyboard feels is very important to them. So that's where mechanical keyboards really kind of fill in that gap or step up, in that they give you a wide variety of options, but more than anything else, they give you better feedback. So the biggest thing that's going to affect feedback on a mechanical keyboard is the actual type of key switches. And I say key switches because each key on a mechanical keyboard is individual. It's independent. It doesn't go through this kind of mass, you know, one single layer of silicone for all of the keys type of design. It's literally a whole bunch of little switches, one for every key, that's mounted to like a printed circuit board underneath. So right there, you've already got an increase in quality in terms of key feel. But the key switches are really what define how a mechanical keyboard feels. So the first thing to talk about with these types of switches is the type of tactile feedback that you'll get. And in general, there are two. There's kind of a smooth linear type of response that you can get where it's the same action from the top of the keystroke all the way down to the bottom. It doesn't really change in how hard it is to press or how it feels. It's just very smooth top to bottom. Then there are also what they call tactile bump or tactile click type of key switches where you get that linear feeling for about halfway down the key press, but then you reach a point where you suddenly have to apply more force to press it the rest of the way. It's like you're pushing it over a speed bump almost. And internally, that's actually kind of how those switches are designed. And some people prefer that feeling because it's generally when you're going over that bump is when the key press registers. So you've got to be a bit more deliberate when you're typing on that kind of a key switch. But some people really like that. They like that they're getting that better tactile response on those types of switches. They just have a better understanding of when the key press actually registers, so they don't necessarily have to pay so much attention to the screen or matching up what, you know, their fingers are doing with what's showing up on the screen to ensure, yes, that key press actually registered. Kind of going along with that is the concept of actuation force. Not all key switches are made equal, of course, and even within those two types, the linear versus the tactile, they can take varying amounts of force to press them down. Some key switches are very light and easy. Some key switches take considerably more force. And again, that's all about preference on the person using the keyboard. And in general, those are rated in terms of grams, basically how much weight it takes to press the key switch down. So the higher the number, the harder or firmer that switch is going to be to press. And then the third aspect to it is going to really be whether the key switch makes any or much noise. Some people, of course, want really quiet key switches for the purposes of not pissing off people near them, or maybe they even themselves are bothered by the noise from a keyboard. Other people happen to like that sound because just like with the tactile feel, the click also gives them a little bit more of an indication as to that the switch has actually been actuated. I happen to fall kind of into that latter camp. My preference is a tactile switch with an audible click, and that actually has been with me for quite a while. I'll tell you about my first mechanical keyboard a little later on. But, you know, I also understand people who want a more linear experience and something that's quieter. And truth be told, the new keyboard that I bought is a tactile type, but it's a non-clicky keyboard, which I'm a little apprehensive about. We'll see whether I like it or not. I'm doing it for the benefit of my coworkers. But also a little bit later on, we'll talk about ways that you can more easily or less expensively find out which key switch is right for you if you are considering a mechanical keyboard. So there are a few other attributes about mechanical keyboards that are important to understand if you go shopping for one, not just the key switches themselves, but also how those switches interact with the keyboard. The vast majority of mechanical keyboards these days are going to connect through USB, although some of them also still support PS2 if you want to use it on an older computer or for this next topic, and that is what's called N-key rollover. Basically, when, you know, we type, we're most of the time only pressing one key at a time, right? You know, we press a letter and then we move on to the next one. Even if we're touch typists, in general, we're still only pressing one key at a time. But there are certain activities where you need to press keys simultaneously, especially if you need to use modifier keys, or if you're doing an activity like playing a game that requires you to press multiple keys simultaneously in order to, you know, get the result that you want. Also, there are some, I would say, relatively fringe cases because they're not very frequent, but there are some touch typists who are just so fast that they actually start pressing one key before they've completely let off of the previous one. And what N-key rollover basically defines is how many keys simultaneously that you can press and have the keyboard recognize, right? Older, crappier, cheaper keyboards may not be able to recognize as many keys simultaneously as others. And this is all dependent on the design of the keyboard internally, its circuitry. Actually, a lot of older, like mechanical keyboards, not membrane keyboards, can be really good at N-key rollover, being able to, you know, handle multiple simultaneous key presses because of the protocol. PS2 doesn't have as many limits on simultaneous communication as things like USB. Now, of course, USB has been getting better, and there are a couple of different modes within the USB protocol that can define whether N-key rollover is an issue or not. But when you go shopping for mechanical keyboards, a lot of them will still include a USB to PS2 adapter in the box because some people who are just very serious about, you know, simultaneous key presses will actually use computers, seek out motherboards that still have PS2 ports on them. But again, that's an issue that's going away as, you know, software manufacturers and keyboard manufacturers and the USB protocol all evolves. We're not really seeing that as being a big deal anymore. But N-key rollover is a feature to keep in mind if you think you're going to end up in a situation where a whole bunch of key presses simultaneously may be happening. A lot of keyboards, even that don't really advertise, you know, a specific N-key rollover value, a lot of them will support 4 or 6 simultaneous presses, which for a lot of people is enough, but maybe not for everybody. So that's a spec that you'll want to look at when you go shopping. A similar kind of thing to think about is the concept of ghosting. And this has to do, again, with how the keyboard is designed and wired up. Obviously, it would be very expensive to design the circuitry inside a keyboard so that every key switch goes directly to a pin on a controller chip, right? That would end up needing a lot of wiring, a very complicated design, probably a lot of chips. So most keyboards have a matrix type of layout where they simply look at rows and columns of keys, and when certain rows and columns of wires get connected, that corresponds to a certain key. But there are certain situations where you could be pressing simultaneous keys within an adjacent area, and an additional keystroke will get registered, even though you didn't press it, right? So maybe you're pressing 3 keys that are adjacent to each other, and a 4th key will get registered that's from that same area, even though you didn't actually physically press it. And that's what's called ghosting. And a lot of mechanical keyboards are going to offer some form of anti-ghosting, but how far they go into it really just depends on the keyboard. The more common keys that need to get pressed simultaneously are going to be ones that manufacturers will target to wire up in such a way that they're less prone to ghosting. So a great example are the WASD keys on the left side of the keyboard as you're, you know, playing maybe a first-person shooter trying to move around. And then also the arrow keys are another great example. Those are generally 2 safe areas where you won't see ghosting as frequently if the manufacturer is doing a good job. But that doesn't have to stop there, and some manufacturers do offer full anti-ghosting across the entire keyboard, usually just through some really creative matrix design. They're still using a matrix type of layout on the keyboard, but maybe they've spread out the keys that kind of correspond to each other in such a way that it's going to be difficult for you to press simultaneous keys and cause a ghost to occur. But that's another thing to keep in mind if that might be an issue for you. Another thing to think about with mechanical keyboards, and this has become a relatively new, and I say relatively new thing with mechanical keyboards, is both the layout and the size. We're all used to the traditional large size keyboards with arrow keys and the 10 key number pad on the side. You know, they're pretty big, pretty wide. They take up a decent amount of desk space. Well, not everyone uses all of those keys. You know, maybe some people don't do that much kind of math type of stuff or accounting or calculating or whatever. So a 10 key number pad isn't really all that important to them. Some people don't even need like the page up, page down, or the pause break or whatever those keys are in between the main sets of keys and the number pad. They really just need arrow keys. And so we've started to see this addition of new form factors for keyboards that basically shrink them down in size. So obviously, like we said, you have full size keyboards that include the number pad and all that. But another market is what they call the 10 keyless or 80% size keyboards, where it's basically you take the keyboard and you delete the number pad portion of it, but the page up, page down keys, the arrow keys and all that, they're still there. And this is personally the type of keyboard that I have at work. I like it because I don't need a number pad and it physically takes up less space. You can go one further step though into what they call a 60% keyboard, where they simply move the arrow keys into the main, you know, QWERTY type of layout and then cut off everything to the right of that. So the insert, delete, page up, page down, all of those are gone as well. Some of those keys may get, you know, remapped into the main QWERTY layout, but some of them are just simply gone and you have to deal with it. And that's also a pretty growing, you know, rapidly growing market. These 60% keyboards, some of them omit function keys altogether as well. So you get a really compact layout. And these are all just additional options. And those are really great to see because not everyone needs all those features or not everyone has a gigantic desk or, you know, maybe people just want a more clean, simple type of experience. So where have we come from with mechanical keyboards? Well, membrane keyboards have been with us for a couple of decades, but that's not where keyboards really started. Mechanical keyboards are actually where the, you know, traditional keyboards actually began. And they date all the way back, you know, decades ago. My very first mechanical keyboard that I ever remember using was this old IBM compatible AT keyboard. And it was from, I'd say, probably the late 80s. And it had those kind of clicky, you know, tactile, noisy switches in it. And I instantly fell in love with it because I've never been that great of a typist. I have, you know, been forced to take typing classes when I was in school and I hated it. And, you know, you can only do Mavis Beacon so much before you just like tune out and be like, screw it, whatever, and just start mashing and who cares. So what I found, though, was the mechanical keyboards actually improved my typing skills. Not dramatically. It didn't take me from someone who's, you know, hunt and peck on a keyboard to a full-fledged touch typist, you know, like a night and day type of difference. But it did make a pretty big difference in how accurate my typing was. And then to another extent, some of the speed. I got a little bit faster. And that's a lot just due to the feedback that I got from a keyboard. I found that I don't necessarily have to press a key all the way down to the bottom for it to actuate. As soon as I feel that bump or hear the click, then I can move on to the next key. So that's helped improve speed. And then also because I get that tactile response, I know that I've pressed the key instead of, you know, wondering, well, did I press that all the way? Did I hit the key off to the side and it didn't quite register or whatever? It overall improved my typing capability. So, you know, we've been seeing this major growth in mechanical keyboards, and a lot of it's just due to the experience. And that growth has just been incredible. I would say probably in the last 10, 15 years. You know, there used to be just a few different makes, models of key switches, like IBM you know, IBM's own keyboards. The Model M is like an iconic keyboard. And for a long time, that was kind of the model on which mechanical keyboards were built, right? But now we've got so many more options in terms of switches. How do you know which one's right for you? These mechanical keyboards, they can be inexpensive. I've seen them as cheap as $30-$40, but they can also be very expensive. I've seen keyboards as expensive as $300 to $400. Obviously, that's a decent amount of money to spend on a keyboard just to find out that you don't like it, and not all places that sell mechanical keyboards accept returns. So when I went shopping for my most recent keyboard, I ended up picking up one of these first. This is what's called a key switch tester. And it's basically just a piece of acrylic with a bunch of like legit real mechanical key switches stuck in it. The idea is one is of a different type. Each is different, different styles, different actuation forces, all of that. And they're not even like electrically hooked up. This doesn't really do anything. You can't use it as a mini number pad or arrow keys or anything on your computer. But it's inexpensive enough that you get an idea as to what each type of switch is like. Because, you know, I could sit here and describe all these different types of switches and how they feel and how they sound and all that. But it's really something you need to experience in real life in person. So one of these testers is a great way to do it. I think this particular one, which has 9 key switches on it, I picked it up from Amazon for, I'd like to say $12. It was pretty cheap. These key switches generally only go for $1 each if you need to buy replacements. And like I said, this is a really great example. So you've got all these different styles of switch and you can just sit here and play with all of them and figure out which ones you like the best. So you can probably hear it. That's what they call a Cherry MX Blue switch. It's a tactile switch and it's very clicky. But there are other types that are linear and silent, and some that are tactile and clicky but not quite as noisy. What I ended up buying with for my new keyboard, now my previous one is an MX Blue, the new one is an MX Brown, in that it's a tactile switch, it still gives you that physical bump, but it doesn't really have that clicky sound to it. So hopefully it'll keep my coworkers from getting quite so upset. But if you want to figure out what kind of keyboard to buy, you know, you can, there's tons of videos on YouTube that you can watch where people give demos of keyboards. And I've even done, you know, a keyboard review myself. In some ways, though, you really need to feel the key switches first to decide what your preference is if you don't have any experience with a mechanical keyboard. So something like one of these, $10 to $15, and they come with different varieties of key switches and different sizes and all that. I think it's worth the money, you know, to potentially save you from buying a keyboard that you ultimately don't like. Now, I guess the final question is, who's even buying these keyboards? Well, the honest answer is pretty much everybody. You know, you would think that it's this really geeky thing that, you know, only hardcore gamers or whatever get into, but it's actually got pretty broad appeal because a lot of people use computers for different things. So obviously gamers are a big category because they want to know for sure when they're pressing keys in game and aren't pressing the wrong ones. And, you know, they prefer to get that kind of response, you know, responsiveness feedback out of a keyboard. But people who just generally type a lot during the day have found that mechanical keyboards are their thing. So not just writers. I love having, you know, a nice clicky keyboard for when I'm banging out scripts for, you know, other YouTube episodes. But also people who write code for a living tend to really love mechanical keyboards because, hey, guess what they're using all day, right? It's a pretty important tool to them. What's interesting, though, is it's not just a simple matter of, you know, hey, I'm a writer, hey, I'm a programmer, hey, I'm a gamer, and these are what I like in a keyboard, and I just go out and buy a keyboard that feels the way I like it to feel, and that's it. the subculture has actually started to go much, much deeper than that, to the point where I would say that the appearance of a keyboard is becoming almost, if not as important as the actual function of the keyboard. You know, gone are the days of you go out to the store and you buy a keyboard and it's just this big beige slab and that's it. Obviously, we've got the different form factors now, like we talked about with the 80% and the 60% styles, but the key caps themselves are a sticking point for some people. People have their own preferences for the color of the keycaps or the font or the layout of the keys, even how the printing on the keycaps is, or even whether there's any printing on the keycaps. Some people go with completely blank keyboards because they're touch typists and they want to show off that they're touch typists. Other people, they want a big bold font that's easy to read because maybe they, like me, suck at typing. Other people don't want to worry about the lettering wearing off the keys, so they want the lettering to be printed on the front of the keycaps instead of the top. All sorts of stuff like that. I can tell you my new keyboard is going to be not too off the deep end. It's another 80% size like I was talking about, but it's got some kind of cool gray and blue colors going on with it, which I think, you know, it's fun. It didn't really cost any extra to get different colored keycaps on there. So, hey, why not? The last thing with keyboards is we're starting to see some additional functionality. Of course, you know, we've seen media keys on keyboards to control music, playback, and volume up and down and all that. And some keyboards have also included USB ports. So if you want to plug in like a flash drive or a wired mouse or a controller or whatever, you don't have to fill around the back of your computer and find an open USB port to plug it into. But we've also seen a major increase in backlit keyboards, whether those are single color or whether they're multicolor, but you can only control the entire keyboard in one shot, or like we've really started to see ramp up are individually lit keys with multicolor LEDs underneath them, where you can actually set every single key to a different color. And kind of like with the colored keycaps, you know, that's a personal preference type of thing. Some people, and I notice gamers use this a lot, where they can color code keys for different things so that, you know, maybe you're playing in the dark and you don't want to, you know, mistake one key for another, that sort of thing. You can color code them so it's really easy to figure out what key does what. So not just the breadth of styles of keyboard have been really, you know, broadening, but the depth has gotten much, much more involved. You know, there are dedicated places on the internet just to discuss mechanical keyboards. There's a great Reddit subreddit. I think it's just R Mechanical Keyboards. There are a number of different websites. Geek Hack, I think, is one of them. It's been a while since I've been there. Where you can just have lots of people who go really deep into the weeds describing these keyboards and the minutiae between a few of them. Some people even go and build their own keyboards, which is kind of crazy to think of. But, you know, it ultimately just gets people what they want. And, you know, it's their money and it's relatively harmless. It's just a keyboard. So I say go for it. Go ahead and customize. Get exactly what you want, because if you're spending all day in front of it, well, you might as well use a tool that works for you. So I am curious, of course, as to your thoughts. I'd imagine a number of you watching my channel, watching this episode, are probably into mechanical keyboards. I'm, of course, you know, curious what kind of keyboard is your preference. Is there something that really drives you crazy? Is there something that you always tend to gravitate towards? Do you not even care? Maybe you don't spend that much time in front of a keyboard, so whatever cheap mechanical thing, or membrane thing, I should say, that's, you know, set in front of you, maybe you're just totally happy using that. Whatever. I'm just curious as to your thoughts, so be sure to sound off down in the comments below. So if you like the video, I would appreciate a thumbs up. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ThisDoesNotComp. And as always, thanks for watching.